Welcome to A Longer Table Podcast, a space where curiosity and proximity will challenge everything you thought you knew. I'm your host, Amanda Carpenter, inviting you to pull up a seat. You just might leave thinking, maybe we're not so different. This episode is brought to you by Cozy Earth, the world's softest bedding, towels, pajamas, and more. Stay comfortable with their luxurious, temperature-regulating fabrics that are made with bamboo viscose. Y'all know I'm not a big shopper, but when I do, I view it as an investment. That's why I love Cozy Earth. Everything is high quality with a 10-year warranty. And I can assure you that gifting a pair of their jammies will make you the most generous gift giver. They especially make a great gift for pregnant women and postpartum moms. Check it all out for yourself at CozyEarth.com and save 35% with our code ALONGERTABLE. Patricia Taylor is a wife, mom, and California native turned Texas transplant. She believes in brown Jesus, loving all our neighbors, and having critical conversations around racial justice with clarity and candor. As an anti-racism educator, podcaster, and writer, Patty has had various speaking and teaching opportunities, including contributing to Sesame Street in communities through education-based videos and course writing. You're going to hear all about her and just why I love her so much, and we'll be sure to link her work in our show notes so that you can follow her on Instagram and read along with her thoughts from your Black friend. I can't wait for you to listen to this one. Patty, I'm super excited for this conversation. Thanks for agreeing to come on A Longer Table.
Of course. I'm so excited. Like, I feel like this is really overdue. We talk so often, but this is the first time we're really talking like this, and I'm excited to dive in.
I totally agree. So for people that don't know you, your Instagram bio says, "I'm nobody's expert, but I know some things. I'm a Black woman living in America." I find that so powerful. I've so enjoyed following and learning from you. What's something that I wouldn't know about you just from following you online?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm like, there's so much that we don't know about each other, right?
Totally.
I'm like, I can say some like really deep things or some silly things. A really goofy thing that's just a total me thing. I really, really am terrified of ants. You can laugh. It's okay.
Like
I do not like ants. Like tiny
okay.
ants. But like, if there are ants, like a trail of ants in my house, I'm going to lose it. If it's a spider, oh, I've got it covered. The worst thing of all, roaches, they're disgusting, but I will get rid of it. A row of ants, I will seriously like, somebody get the ants. They're going to get into my cabinets. There's so many of them.
My gosh.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But, you know, it's just one of those things.
Like,
they just give me the creeps,
fears.
You know, like they just give me the creeps. So I'm like, too many ants, too many ants.
Yeah. You would not have wanted to be in my house right before the holidays. So a few months back, we had like an ant infiltration. I don't even know if that's the right word, but we like couldn't figure out where they were coming from, which is the biggest issue because
we
just kept seeing, and there were so many.
Yeah.
So many. And then they were up in my cabinets. Like we finally got rid of our honey and now we put honey in a special Tupperware because I don't even know, but we had to use Raid and like probably all these horrible chemicals to get rid of all my ants. But
my skin's crawling right now. Thank you.
I would not know that about you had I not gotten to sit down like this.
Super important information to start things off.
Super important. I mean, that's the journey though. That's the joy of sitting with people face to face. We experience a humanness that we don't get to experience just by following someone through the internet, you know? And I just wish that somehow this type of thing, what we're doing right now, translated to the internet.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
It is hard. Yeah. And I don't share much about my family online because of what I do and because of the resistance I sometimes encounter, you know, but I do like every so often share a post where maybe a Friday introduction or call it what you will, where I'm reminding people, like, I'm not just here as your anti-racist educator robot. Like I'm a whole person. I'm a woman, I'm a mom of three girls, you know, like I'm doing like the mom things and I'm working and I'm, you know, running errands and taking care of boo-boos and, you know, cuddling with kids at night, like all the things. So I love this so much because we are so much more than what meets the eye.
Yes, totally. I know recently I've kind of stepped out of my quote unquote lane on social media, and I've just been sharing the other parts of my life that have always been there, mm-hmm. but I just haven't necessarily shared. And it's either met with like applause and, oh my gosh, I love this. And now someone connects with me more.
Right.
Or it's met with like, almost like, why would you post your skincare routine like that? Like, talk about things that matter. And it's like, you know what? We are whole human beings capable of caring about racism in the world and trying to dismantle white supremacy and enjoying a great skincare routine because I'm 30 something years old and I care about that. Like, right.
Yes. I think people want to put us in boxes all the time. I mean, it's not surprising. It never surprises me anymore. But whenever I do share a post that's specific about racism, which I understand because this is what I do and why people follow me. But if I just put a picture of me experiencing joy, or I just recently shared a reel of a trip I took to see family in Michigan, like the way people respond is not negative, but it's just so low. Like, it's just like, oh, that's not really what we're here for. You know,
yeah.
like we're not here for like the Black woman joy. We just, you know, keep on teaching and educating us. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that every time because I'm not going to stop parts of me.
Yes.
To appease what you are expecting. Like, yeah. I'm all of those things.
That's the hard part about social media for people that use it just as an ordinary social media user.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They get that. They can post a photo of their kid's face or them and their kids eating ice cream and all their friends and family like it and, you know, say how cute mm-hmm. everybody is. When you tap into the creative side of using mm-hmm. social media to build something, to do it with a very specific intention,
right.
that's where it gets really tricky.
Yes.
Obviously, we're both naming that struggle. Mm-hmm. What or really why did you decide to share, quote unquote, some thoughts from your Black friend online in the first place? When did that start? Why did that begin? Tell me about the origin story of
yes.
what you do.
Yes, my origin story. I love that. Well, I think like a lot of people, Trayvon Martin was such a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was in California, and we moved a couple years later to Georgia, outside of the Atlanta area. And around that time is when Colin Kaepernick knelt. Well, he was kneeling. And I was like already gobsmacked seeing backlash of Black Lives Matter. And I'm like, I did not have any idea that three little words would cause such a stir. What are people missing? I don't understand. Like, does my Black life not matter? No one's saying no one else's life matters. Like, why aren't we getting this? and all of these thoughts were, you know, brewing in me, and they were there, they were present, but I didn't really feel like that was my lane, honestly, which may sound, you know, silly, but I don't believe that every person of color has to carry that mantle and say, I'm out here to like be an educator and do this. If we are doing more than surviving and thriving and enjoying life, like that's all we need to do.
Totally.
But for me, I was, you know, I guess you categorize me as like mommy blogger lane. And it did start to feel empty for me. Like this was not where my passion was. And I'm seeing, you know, or hearing about videos and these instances of police brutality. And I don't want to post about like this cool snack that my girls love. You know, like because I'm also seeing people who are saying horrible, terrible things about someone else's child, about someone else's brother, you know, someone else's friend, and just thinking like, oh, that's just, it doesn't matter. So all of that kind of combined, and I was terrified when I first shared. It was September 2016. Wow. And that was right before, you know, a very, very interesting election. So there was already like lots of things stirring, but I was so tired in my context where I was, not saying that there weren't, because there are brilliant people who I learn from all the time, always. But at that time in my context, I wasn't seeing anyone who was expressing the thoughts I was having. You know, oh, he's on Patreon. Oh, Colin Kaepernick. Oh, da-da-da. You know, Black lives don't matter. All lives, you know, just all of it was like just merging and crashing. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for a voice to say, well, like, what about me? What about my perspective? What about my lived experience. And it really was like, God, like, well, you get to be that voice. You know, you're looking for someone else. How about you do it? And I did. And that was the title of that piece, with some thoughts from your Black friend. And so it stirred something in me. I think the next post I shared after that was about like some popsicles that we liked, some sponsored posts.
Right back to it.
right back to it. But after that, like, I felt changed. I'm like, this is my passion. This is my purpose. Like, this is where I need to really shift and move. However, there was a lot of fear, a lot of awareness of the cost of getting into this work and doing so publicly, and a lot of doubt in myself that even though I do have my lived experience, you know, what if, you know, people don't listen to me? What if they don't care, you know? And it's interesting that you brought up my bio, because the original bio actually said, I'm nobody's expert. I'm just a Black woman living in America. Because there was still this part of me that was like, I don't want to put too much like expectation out there, you know? But that was my first piece, was 2016, titled Some Thoughts from Your Black Friend, and my previous, like, you know, mommy blog. But I started this page where I officially fully pivoted in April of 2019. So it took time for me to get to this point where I said, I'm committed to this. This is really like where I need to be and what I need to do.
Yeah. What would you say like your mission really is? Like, what are you trying to achieve through what you're creating and posting frequently through Some Thoughts from your Black friend?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there are lots of people who want to be heard, but they aren't listening to people who don't have their lived experience. And I want to be someone that someone can say, hey, this is real life, not some ethereal, like out in space, like maybe kind of situation. Like, no, this is a real person with real experiences. And maybe we should lean in instead of dismissing what she has to say. Mm-hmm. You know, I want it to be a space where we can grow and learn together, you know, where this is, you know, anti-racism is a journey, and it's a lifelong journey. It's not, you know, a quick, like, oh yeah, I got a good lesson, read a good book, and then I'm done. I want to journey with people as we grow together. And I want people to understand that there's so much more that we could be if we really valued each other and saw each other and loved each other. Like, if our imagination was so much greater and grander and more vast and more expansive, like, there's so much more for all of us, like all of us, not just Black people, not just people of color, for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I often think when I read things online that I disagree with, or I'm in a conversation at a family gathering and we don't see things the same way, I come back to that question. Are we really listening to each other? I think if we were to actually become better listeners, better conversationalists, better question askers, and we slowed down and we put our defenses aside and we just truly listened, I think a lot more often than not, we want the same thing. We just see different paths to getting there. And that when we actually listen humbly and with genuine curiosity, that's like, it's magical. It's like a slice of heaven on earth, right? And so I love that you're putting it out there for the people that are interested. Obviously, you can't force people to be interested, which
right.
is, you know, if only. But for those that are interested, it sounds like you're, and I, from what I've witnessed upon following you and like getting to know you again via the interwebs, it's like it's so great that you generously, vulnerably share your lived experience, your perspective. And I don't see that as combative to mine, even though mine is different. I just see it as rounding out the way that I think and the way that I see the world. And it's just helpful, which is kind of the whole point of a longer table, right? Things aren't black and white. They are not as they seem. There's this gray space. And the only way we are able to get there is by inviting these other voices into our mm-hmm. life. So I have kind of a specific question that has to do with mm-hmm. racism for you. You have said that proximity to Blackness isn't going to solve racism. I agree. Right. I believe that proximity is necessary because, I mean, how can you know and love a person if you aren't close or in a relationship with them? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, proximity alone can't be the only thing.
Right.
What do you believe from your perspective as a Black woman needs to happen if we were ever going to solve or end racism mm-hmm. in this world?
Yes.
I know. I mean, massive question.
Yeah, that's a loaded question right there. I mean, it's really complex because there is a part of me that I am a highly empathetic person. And so it's very hard for me to grasp that there are so many people who don't either just don't care, because let's be real, some people really just don't care, or some don't have the capacity or the desire, wherever people may land, but people who don't want to lean into other people's story because, well, it's not like mine. So I just don't care. You know, like for me, that is very hard to grasp because I'm like, I have to shut it down because I care about everything and I want to like help everything and all the people and be that, you know, and teach me more and help me see, like, I that's where I want to be. But so there is a part of me that's like, I don't want people to like have to have a Black friend or have a Black spouse to be like, oh yeah, now we should start caring about Black people. Like, what about like, why would it take like, oh, I have to know someone who looks different to care about them. You know, but that is where a lot of people land. On the other side of that though, there are dialogues and conversations that happen when you know someone. And there is truth to, you just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and some of it is historical and you have to do your own work to root that out. Much of it is systemic and there has to be like this knowledge of, it's not just individual, like, well, great, now I've rounded up my Black friends, so we're good now. Like, what's the next step and how does this affect us systemically? But there has to be that willingness, like you pointed to earlier, because I have, unfortunately, thankfully, I'm not there now, but I have been in too many spaces in the last 3, 4, 5 years where I have had white friends, people who I considered so close. I mean, family, like this, like, we love you, Patty. Like, we're here for you. And in the summer of 2020, when it was Dial a Black Friend in the midst of COVID, I was getting, you know, letters, cards, gift baskets, things dropped off on my doorstep from all these people who are for me. People who I did life with, if we want to, you know, talk churchy terms, you know, but people who like I interacted with often, our kids hung out, you know, we saw each other weekly, you know, pre-COVID. But then there had to be reckoning within themselves that required some internal examination of, well, how can I be more anti-racist? Maybe I've not examining these parts of me that are contributing to the problem. Oh, I didn't realize this. I need to lean in and learn more. And rather than do that, far too many said, nah, I'm out. So me knowing them was still not enough for them to say, I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking with you. I'm here for the long haul. And so there has to be this like multidimensional, you know, like, no, you're not going to just go to sleep and wake up and say, I've got it. I'm anti-racist now and bring me along and we're doing all the things and let's go. But there has to be a willingness. There has to be intentionality. And then always wondering, well, what's next? You know, there's always a next step for every single one of us. So let's say we have this fantastic friendship and we're learning from each other. Well, how does that translate to policy? How you're voting? How does that translate to the systemic portion of it? You know, are you still going to be like, well, I'm great having you as a friend, but I don't want to give up these privileges. So I'm still going to, you know, lean into my comfort in this way. So I just think it's being willing to go deep. And I do find that in the best case scenario, you're willing to go deep with people that you trust, people that you know, people that you have experienced, you know, real relationship with. And I also wish it didn't take all of that to see each other as fully human and to want to engage with each other in the fullness of our humanity.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. We'll get back to the conversation after this quick advertisement. My favorite pieces in my wardrobe come from Able. Not only is every piece super cute and high quality, but there's a meaningful mission behind this woman-run company. Able is making the table longer by adding more sizes. They offer apparel in double extra small to 3X. And I have to tell you about their size swap program. It's simple yet profound. When your size changes, such as postpartum or when you've gone through a long period of grief, when you've started a new workout routine, Able will allow you to swap yours for another size. Take a look at their Basics We Love section and you'll see a lot of the things I wear every day. Next time you're in need of a new pair of pants or tops, shop ableclothing.com and use code ALONGERTABLE15 for 15% off. Now back to the show. What is something, if you don't mind me asking, if one of your white friends, say me, says or does something that is a microaggression or is even outright racist and they don't know it, they didn't realize it, how do you handle that? Because I'm assuming this has come up because you have such a diverse community of people in your life. You are a Black woman, but you have white friends, you have white family members, relatives. So tell me, how do you handle that when that happens?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, it's not a one size fits all answer. I am in a place now where, again, like if we're friends, I feel a level of safety where I can be honest about, hey, maybe you didn't know this. Like I do want to extend the benefit of the doubt. You know, if we're friends, I don't go into any situation thinking they did this on purpose to hurt me. You know, they just maybe didn't know. But there has to be that safety there. Because I have, again, like just over the years had lots of different responses when I'm in that situation, because it's still, even with the best, like most well-intentioned white friend, it still is a level of burden, you know, on me as a Black friend. And sometimes things just surprise me. And I'm like, whoa, I just didn't expect that. And I don't react in the moment. And then I'm kicking myself because I feel like I should have reacted in the moment. There have been times where I've been a bit more passive aggressive about it, not to be like nasty, but just because I was so stunned by what happened. I had a friend, like this is years ago, but I wear my hair in braids often, and that's how most people see me. And I had my hair in two like Afro puffs one day, walking into this, actually in a church setting. And I walked in and my friend came up to me and squeezed my Afro puffs, like grabbed them both, like a big hunk of hair. It was like, oh my gosh, it's so pretty. And she's the words that she's saying are complimentary and nice and like kind. And I am mortified. I'm just like, I did not expect that reaction from you. I switch my hair up often and I'm like leaning back, like, could you please, you know?
Yeah.
And I did like kind of physically like, okay, you know, thanks. Like, please, please don't. But then it was like later when there was more of a group conversation, not to call her out, but it actually came up somehow, like in a general way where I was able to say, yeah, like it's really inappropriate and uncomfortable when my hair is touched, you know? And then she came right over to me after and was like, oh my gosh, I just did that. I'm so sorry. Nowadays, that was like said some years ago. Nowadays, I just have the conversation. Like if we're friends, I'm trusting and believing that you see me. If we're friends, I'm trusting and believing that you are not okay with the status quo, that you are on your journey of anti-racism and you're committed to that journey of anti-racism. And you may be in a different place in your journey of anti-racism, but there's something that we can, you know, find value in each other and love for each other that I trust that, oh, you use this phrase that I don't know if you know, but it actually has some historical roots that are racist. And oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Let me, you know, change that. Let me update this or put an edit in my caption. That's something that happened just a couple months ago, you know, or if someone's saying, oh my gosh, like, I'm going to use this terminology and it's fine for them. But I'm like, that's actually, I don't know if you know this, but this terminology is not actually, you know, sitting well with me. Then I hope it will be reciprocal, you know, and not necessarily about race or racism. But if I do anything in a friendship that is, you know, makes the other person uncomfortable, then I want to be told, like, I want to know that wasn't okay, so I can be a better friend to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I was just thinking even that if someone listening were like, well, I don't really get the big deal about touching someone's hair. Like, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. Let's say, okay. Cause there might be people listening who just mm-hmm. don't really get it. One of the first thoughts that I have that comes up for me is, regardless of how you feel about it, or if you don't understand it, regardless of ethnicity, race, any of that stuff involved, if a person that you love or that you're connected with in some way and have respect for tells you they don't like something you've said mm-hmm. or done to them, mm-hmm. that should be enough. That alone should be enough for us mm-hmm. to just say, oh my goodness, I apologize. My intent was not, you know, malicious, but I totally want to respect you. And so I will not do that going forward. You know, it's just like, doesn't have to be a huge thing. I feel like,
I
feel like a lot of things blow up and become more dramatic and bigger issues when we don't listen to each other. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it sounds like the conversation that went down with your friend in that scenario ended pretty well. You know, it sounds like she was apologetic and like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean this. And I, you know, won't happen again, whatever, hugs you, moves on. I don't know why. And I'm even asking myself sometimes, like, why can't things go down like that more often, where we just believe mm-hmm. a person, we trust that they're not out to get us mm-hmm. when they correct us or let us know that something we've said or done isn't appropriate or isn't the best choice of words or whatever. It just goes so much more smoothly if we have humility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're taking the words out of my mouth, because I was going to say, well, because everyone isn't humble. Everyone isn't willing to just sit with, I was wrong. I made a mistake, small or large. Like, I completely get the discomfort. It's interesting because I know that you can relate too. People are always going to come to some conclusions based on what they see of us online. And I don't mince words, but I am not a confrontational person. Like, I'm not. And I even had a situation this week at work where someone was really, really nasty with me. And I was hot. I was talking to my coworkers. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what is wrong with this woman? You know, but then like in the moment, I very politely and tactfully was like, I didn't appreciate how, you know, you spoke to me, but it makes me very uncomfortable. You know, I'm like, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it, but I want to be a person who gives what I hope to receive, you know, and there is, I can just quickly share another example around the same time frame, actually, of the hair touching incident. There was someone who at the time I fully believed they loved our family and loved us well, loved our children. And once they referred, this is a white individual, and they referred to my youngest as like, oh, like cutie, oh my gosh, like little monkey. Mm. And, you know, for your listeners who don't know, I'm not going to go into it because Google is free. You know, there is such deep historic roots to why that terminology is highly offensive. Mm-hmm. And there was a part of me that was like, wanted to rage, like, how do you not know this, first of all? But then I said, oh, that was one of those in the moment moments, like, you know, like that makes me really uncomfortable. Please don't refer to my children as monkeys. You know, I don't know if you know this, but it has this racial history, and you as a white person, and it was a white male. I was like, it makes me very uncomfortable. And rather than saying, oh my gosh, like you said, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, okay. I'm feeling all the things, you know, because I'm embarrassed, or I'm, you know, yeah. I don't want things to be awkward between us, and I'm just sorry. The response was, well, that's not how I meant it. Mm. And so just often it's this impact over intent. Mm. We don't mean, sometimes if we want to really truly believe that in spite of what we may see, like, most people are trying their best, you know, that doesn't mean that intentionality always lines up with impact though. So once you are aware of the impact, then it's incumbent upon you to make that change. It's on you to say, here's how I can right this situation, and then learn from it so we can move on to something else. And the learning continues in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like if you didn't mean it that way, which I believe probably is true for most people when that is their like natural gut reaction. It's like, oh, I didn't mean it like that. You probably didn't. But the key component here is to take ownership, right?
Exactly. You know?
And this extends far beyond racial conversations too. Like in all relationships, if we really want to hear people and see people and do relationships well and in healthy ways, we can give people the benefit of the doubt. So something I'll often say, because a lot of the only way that I can really relate to what we're talking about very specifically right now outside of race is as like a foster parent who prior to Shia, like I didn't have bio kids, and people would often say things about me as a mother, but like not refer to me as a mother. It just was always wonky. I know they didn't mean it badly.
Right,
like I know they weren't trying to be mean, but I would lovingly and kindly kind of educate and correct them. And if anyone had responded like, oh, I didn't mean it like that, I probably would have said, well, I know you might not have meant it like that, but this is why it's important. All I'm asking is not for someone to like be perfect. Like I don't need someone to be perfect, but just when I like point something out that is offensive or is hurtful in some way, like, can you just simply say like, oh my goodness, that is noted. I will not say that again. Thank you for pointing that out to me. I don't know. That's how I try to respond. Again, not perfectly. Defenses still rise in me a lot of times when I get called up, but I know that usually once I've simmered down and maybe the embarrassment or the shame is gone, I'm always so grateful that someone taught me something or did feel like they could be real with me and tell me that what I did wasn't okay or was harmful of some type.
And it all communicates to that person that you matter.
Yeah.
You know, like do we matter to each other? You know, I believe you when you say you're my family and I matter to you. But if, you know, you stay stuck in this mode of, well, you can't tell me anything that I've done because I didn't mean it that way, you know, hurt you, then I don't really believe you anymore. You know, I think what matters more to you in that moment is protecting your ego, you know, or coming across in a certain way. And so that's, like you said, it's hard and it's uncomfortable. And then there are so many other areas that I too am learning in, but when I may, you know, I'm in a job right now where I'm working with kids with disabilities, and the way that they label the program, you know, I was told by a friend who is a mother to kids with disabilities that people within the disabled community do not appreciate that terminology. Now this terminology is, and I'm not repeating it, so it's not to, you know, hopefully not to offend anyone who may be listening, but this all over all the paperwork and everything, like this is like the standard stamp of approval of like, this is just what we call it. And I had those same feelings where I was like, oh my gosh, like I didn't mean to, like, I don't want to offend anyone. And okay. But like, well, I thought it was okay because they call this whole program this name, but I want to listen to the people that it's impacting. Not the people who are, you know, writing these things, but not living it. Not the people who are dispensing information, but don't have the lived experience. You know, if I also want to show people that they matter, then I'm going to change things. I'm going to, you know, check my vocabulary, my language, and lean in when I don't know as much about foster care and say, well, let me tune into what Amanda is saying. You know, let me sit with some things. And I'm like, I don't know about this, but okay. Oh, I didn't know about this. Let me listen to adults, you know, adoptees. And that's another area where I'm like, I don't have that experience. Let me hear what they have to say. So there's room for all of us in that space, but how willing are we to grow, to walk in humility, to accept fault when we mess up, and then to keep going?
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a good word. I think the way that I would love to end our conversation today, Patty, if you're open to it, is I want to know who has made the table longer for you, or in other words, who's given you opportunities or maybe even like changed a belief that you once held.
Too many people to name. I mean that though, because I think in every context that I've been in, I've met people who are different, and I've wanted to know more about what made them different. And then the course of that realized how much we held that was the same. You know, the ladies who I adore, and I know you know them, that I did the used to do the podcast, Upside Down podcast with, Kayla, Lindsay, and Elisa. They are definitely recent examples. All of us coming from, you know, different faith backgrounds, but all coming together to have these ecumenical conversations on spirituality and justice. And Elisa is Catholic, and growing up in the tradition I did, the Christian tradition I did, I would hear all sorts of very negative things about, you know, well, Catholics aren't really this, or Catholicism is this, you know? And I'm like, I will fight tooth and nail for that woman, you know? Like, don't you dare question her and her faith and her belief and her prayers, you know? But I don't know if I would have arrived at that if I, you know, like, how many, if I'm just not around, and I know this is a, like, a huge thing that people say, again, proximity. Well, I just don't know Black people, you know? but having conversations and getting to know each of these women just taught me something. You know, having conversations with other people of color, not Black, because I have my experience. But what is it like to be Asian in America? Mm-hmm. What is it like to be Latinx in America? You know, what is it like to be biracial in America? I don't know that, but I do have biracial children. So I want to learn from them. What is it like to be a Native American in this, in America? I mean, the literal group who was here before all of us, who gets left out of the conversation more than anyone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad that I have like a people from all different areas, like, not to categorize people, but in the sense of like, this person has such this different experience, different background, you know, different race and ethnicity, you know, different parenting styles, you know, different marital situation, you know, all of it. And so I just wanted to stay open to those experiences. And also, I've felt like I can expand more in myself because of other Black people and Black women in particular, who have cheered me on and who've reminded me that I can walk in my fullness in every space, and there's no need for me to shrink, and I can continue on this journey, continue bringing people along, continue my learning and my growing, but I am more than enough as I am. And that helps me to feel like I can take up this space with this confidence and also invite other people into the fold with me.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love hearing that.
Yeah.
And for people who, again, listen to this podcast maybe, and they're like, I just live in an area, or I just am somehow deeply entrenched in a community where there's not different people groups, and I'm kind of surrounded by everyone who looks like me and has similar life experiences as me. What I always say is that books are your friend. Podcasts can be your mentors. Like, there is so much information. We've never lived in a time where there is more available, accessible information. And so if you say, I really want a Black friend, but I don't have one, pick up a book written by a Black author. Start there. Mm-hmm. If you say, I don't know anyone who's gay, well, again, maybe listen to a podcast from someone who, you know, it's just like, it is so no longer okay to use the excuse of just like, but you don't live where I live, or you don't know. It's like, it's there if you want it. My hope with a longer table is that it will always remind and re-inspire people to get curious. It's when we get curious and when we are humble and choose to seek it out that our table will get longer. Our belief system will broaden. And I think everyone benefits. I think that's how we really listen to each other. So Patty, thank you so much for being here. You're such a gift.
Oh, absolutely. It's been my pleasure. And I just want to add quickly with love. I mean, really, like, loving people, like genuinely loving people, should spur us on to want to get to know each other, to want us to examine our bookshelves, to want us to say, well, I have a lot of Black authors, but I don't have many queer authors or Indigenous authors, or, you know, like, what's always the next step? How can I continue to open it wider?
Yeah.
So just here to say, I agree.
No, it's good. I you're saying I love that. I love that you added that on, because it should be motivated by love. It shouldn't be motivated by performance or the need to prove something. Yes. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be motivated by the desire to, I'm going to prove that my way is the right way, or whatever right. the case is. Yes. It's like, I love everything comes back to our motivations, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And our intent. And I think if it's motivated by love, that's a great place to start. Mm-hmm.